General Motors gave customers dozens of lacquer colors and a range of upholstery options to choose from, while the Ford car came in green, red, blue, and black, which at least was more variety than a few years earlier, when Ford reportedly told his customers they could have their car in any color they wanted, so long as it's black. From May 1927, when the Ford Motor Company stopped production on the T, to October, when the first Model A was assembled, many doubted that Ford could pull off the changeover. It was costing a fortune, estimated by one historian at $250 million, because the internal workings of the just-opened River Rouge factory, which had been designed to roll out T's into the indefinite future, had to be refitted to make the A. Yet on the first 2 days of its debut, over 10 million Americans visited their local Ford dealers to inspect the new car, available in a range of body types and colors, including Arabian sand, rose beige, and andalusite blue. Within a few months, the company had received over 700,000 orders for the A, and even Ford's detractors had to admit that he had staged a remarkable comeback. The New York exhibit was held in the old 50th Street Madison Square Garden, drawing over 1 million people and eclipsing the nearby National Car Show. All the many styles of the new model were on display at the Garden, as was the Lincoln touring car, since Ford had bought Lincoln Motors 6 years earlier, giving him a foot in the luxury car market without having to reconfigure his own factories. But the Ford exhibit wasn't really an automobile show. It was rather built around this one idea, said Edsel, a visual demonstration of the operation of the Ford industries, from the raw materials to the finished product. Visitors passed by displays of the manically synchronized workstations that Ford was famous for, demonstrations of how glass, upholstery, and leather trimmings were made, and dioramas of Ford's iron and coal mines, his blast furnaces, gas plants, northern Michigan timberlands, and fleets of planes and ships. A few even got to see Henry himself direct operations. Speed that machine up a bit, he said, as he passed a mobile model of two men leisurely sawing a tree against a background of dense forest growth. Though he was known to have opinions on many matters, as Henry Ford made his way through the convention hall, reporters asked him mostly about his cars and his money. How much are you worth? One shouted out. I don't know and I don't give a damn, Ford answered. Stopping to give an impromptu press conference in front of an old lathe he had used to make his first car, Ford said he was optimistic about the coming year, sure that his new River Rouge plant, located in Ford's hometown of Dearborn, just outside of Detroit, would be able to meet demand. No one raised his recent humiliating repudiation of anti-Semitism, though while in New York, Ford met with members of the American Jewish Committee to stage the final scene in the reconciliation between Henry Ford and American Jewry, as the Jewish Telegraphic Agency described the conference. Most reporters tossed feel-good questions. One wanted to know about his key to success. Concentration on details, Ford said. When I worked at the lathe in 1894, the car maker nodded to the machine behind him, I never thought about anything else. A journalist did ask him about reports of a price war and whether it would force him to lower his asking price for the A. I know nothing about it, replied Ford, who for decades had set his own prices and wages free of serious competition. Nothing is wrong with anything, he said, and I don't see any reason to believe that the present prosperity will not continue. Ford wanted to talk about something other than automobiles. The previous August, he had taken his first airplane ride, a 10-minute circle over Detroit in his friend Charles Lindbergh's Spirit of St. Louis, just a few months after Lindbergh had made his historic nonstop transatlantic trip. Ford bragged that he handled the stick for a little